Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:21 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 6th. Silver jumped again in here today, up another $2. And this is a spectacular move. This is, in fact, the swiftest advance we've seen since the peak back in 2011. If you go back and think about the pace of the advance back then, it was pretty spectacular. And we also had these periods where the price was jumping in the order of $2 a day. Now, we also know the size of the Dahmer dynamic that peaked in May of 2011, because it opened at 48 and closed at 35, so that was a $13 down day. It only succeeded in erasing a week of massive advances. It was the subsequent bear market, it was the second big downward dynamic, that really represented the true wake up call for a lot of investors, despite the fact that we had the massive acceleration and this huge downward dynamic. Now, I'm not predicting that this is what we're going to see on this occasion, because this is quite different. An acceleration following what had been a prolonged bull market is not the same thing as an acceleration up and out of a very prolonged ranging phase, and not least because of the failed downside break. A failed downside break, particularly when the dynamic of the failure is bigger than the dynamic of the breakdown, usually sees us see the price go straight back up and test the upper side of the range. It's a rule of thumb from the chart seminar. But we've subsequently seen the price almost rise 50% since the breakout point above $20. Based upon the speed of the advance, it could quite easily hit the $30 area tomorrow. And this is pretty predictable. We had the lengthy base formation, and then you get an explosive breakout. This is clearly an explosive breakout, and it will continue until we get a downward dynamic. And the downward dynamic will be large enough to clearly register with investors, will then likely move into a ranging phase. But we're in the second psychological perception stage of the new bull market. Prior to the breakout, it was all about disbelief. It was only gold that had broken out, and let's not forget, gold broke out 14 months ago. Silver has really only just started to play catch-up in the last month. So it's now in the catch-up phase, and when we look at the gold-silver ratio, well, then we're, presented with a very clear break of trend. And I'm trying to remember my ticker for that. When we look at that particular move, silver has very clearly broken its almost decade-long trend of underperformance relative to gold. And that also had a very clear acceleration up to 120. Now it's down to 71. So it's unwound a very significant portion of its underperformance relative to gold, and that is likely to continue for the life of the bull market. Because the one thing that we can say about the history of silver is that it does tend to lag for the first couple of years of a new bull market in gold, and then it moves into a prolonged period of outperformance relative to gold. That's certainly the case from the period between approximately 2002 and 3, all the way through to the peaks around 2007. Then we had a significant period of underperformance. Then it moved into very significant outperformance for 3 whole years before eventually peaking at an historic new high. But of course, it's not just about silver. What we're now also starting to see is that platinum is starting to pick up again, and it is above the $1,000 level in here today. So it has not quite yet broken out. We can see that there have been failed breaks above $1,000 on a number of occasions over the course of the last 3 years. Those have been false dawns. It's quite likely that on this occasion it will be able to sustain the move above 1,000. This is quite clear that we're seeing that gold had moved on the upside. Gold shares had also then broken out. And it was primarily the better capitalized gold miners had broken out. They did that earlier this year. Then we had some interest in silver evolve, but not before we saw the junior miners breaking on the upside. So junior miners went first, then they took silver. So you can see that there is a processional element to all of this. And now platinum would appear to be catching up with everything else. So it's quite likely that we're also going to see some of those extremely exaggerated, excuse me, extremely exaggerated valuations or ratios being unwound. So, for example, when we look at the gold platinum ratio, well, it got all the way up to 2.4 times, and now that's being unwound. We can also look at more history, and we can clearly see that until approximately 2012, it was extremely unlikely that platinum would trade below the price of gold. It's also worth considering that even though the diesel cheating scandal didn't really break until well into the period 2014 and then got way worse. In fact, the first news reports came out about it in 2011 and 12. So by that stage already, platinum was exhibiting weakness just as the story was breaking. Well, now we're in a completely different scenario because the whole diesel cheating scandal has run its course. Whatever diesel production of vehicles is still going on has been able to survive a really quite prolonged bear market, and there are new use cases evolving for platinum, not least as a catalyst in hydrogen fuel cells. So that's an additional industrial demand in addition to the investment demand. And then when we think about gold, it's also continuing to do well here, and it is extending its move above the $2,000 level, and it's being very clearly supported by the compression in tips yields. So there's a very clear correlation, or an inverse correlation, between the compression in tips yields, which are considered to be real yields, so the real yield is less than 1%, and gold as a what I think is effectively a perpetual zero coupon bond is by contrast got a zero yield, and therefore it is worth more. So the price was up another $25 in here today, and clearly now accelerating. The pace of the advance has picked up meaningfully in the last 3 weeks. We've had a very substantial advance, going up over $250 in the space of 3 weeks is quicker than the pace of the advance in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the move in 2011. Of course, we're coming from a very depressed level overall, and it's again quite different when we were thinking about the big breakout that we had last year. But this move is certainly looking overextended. It's $500, or not quite, but close to $500 overextended relative to the trend mean. So we could quite easily see this breakout and then support start to come through in the region of the previous peak around 1900. That's a potential area of some support. But the much bigger picture here is that gold has just broken out to new all-time highs after a 9-year hiatus. And it was very well supported that we had the breakout, the first step above the base, the confirmation of support in the region of the 200-day moving average, even during a period of extraordinary stress in the global economy, and now subsequent clear outperformance. This is really very similar to the kind of condition that we had in 2008, where there was the clear rationale from investors that interest rates were going to stay low interminably, and that this was obviously then a period of financial repression, and that they were going to do anything possible to stir inflation. Of course, the reality is that today the debt is way higher than it was in 2008. We have companies that are much more levered. We have property prices that are at historic highs, and particularly for commercial real estate, which is extremely high in view of the fact that, against a background where there is the retail apocalypse and a large number of restaurants, shops, malls, and department stores are going bust. So these are asset classes that have got risk inside them, and it greatly inhibits the ability of the central banks of the world, not simply in the USA, but everywhere, to raise interest rates. So gold is also reflecting that reality. But stocks are also benefiting because with inflationary pressures, then they do get back pricing power. And a lot of companies have not had pricing power. The fact that we have extraordinarily low interest rates, that also favors growth. And the Nasdaq was up in positive territory, up over 1% in here today. Now, this trend up from the lows in March has been really quite consistent, and the pullbacks to date have been limited to approximately 500. It's probably more like 600 points. So I think that's one of the clearest consistency characteristics. You have a little, or you have a sequence of little ranges, one above another, and then that those ranges are relatively similar sized. So this becomes a very easy trend to monitor, because as long as it is trending and ranging and pausing at these big psychological levels like 9,000, 10,000, 11,000, well, then the easy prediction is that it will continue, so that the next area of potential resistance is 12,000, and that it shouldn't pull back below 11,000. And it, when it does, well, then that will be a peak of at least near term, potentially medium term significance. When we look at Europe, the continued strength of the euro is an interesting phenomenon, because the Euro Stoxx index, which is all of the Eurozone, is still below the 200-day moving average, but it is holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. When we look at the broader Europe Stoxx index, which is all of Europe, it's got a very similar pattern. The FTSE 100, which is a very internationally oriented index, has lagged by comparison, but it was, or at least it does look like it is putting in a higher reaction low in here right now. But I think the more important point is that when we look at some of the small caps or mid caps, then they have got more of a chart that looks more like the Euro Stoxx rather than the FTSE, for example. When we think about the MDAX in Germany, then it's also outperforming here. It's above the 200-day moving average. Well, what this is suggesting is that the kinds of companies that are very sensitive to the strength of the currency are not performing as well. Those that are less dependent on exports are performing better. And the euro continues to pause here below 120. So it is really quite overbought in the short term, but this is a really clear break of the trend, the downtrend over the last 2.5 years. So there is potential for consolidation, but it looks increasingly likely that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Now, when we look at the Japanese yen, well, the Bank of Japan intervened last week to weaken the yen, so it is continuing to hold around this 104 level. And the Japanese certainly don't want to have the strongest currency in the world. They are willing to arrest the the advance of the currency around this 104 to 105 area. It would really need to sustain a move through it in order to confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment, because we certainly have this sequence of lower rally highs. So there is the clear potential that the dollar will weaken further, and that the yen will continue to appreciate. Of course, the main obstacle to that is the actions of the Bank of Japan. Well, those actions of the Bank of Japan have helped to support the stock market, because there is still an inverse correlation between the yen and the Nikkei. The correlation that was evident, or the inverse correlation that was evident between the euro and the European shares, does appear to be breaking down. They have been able to rally against a background of a strong currency, and that's the first time they've been able to do that in years. It does, I think, suggest that investors are willing to look at Europe, not least because of the potential that they are abandoning the fiscal straitjacket, which was just unabashedly self-destructive, and they are willing to look at the kinds of measures that are required to achieve the long-term goal of a federal union. When everyone is talking about the potential for the dollar to lose its reserve status, well, the very tempting conclusion is that the most logical potential alternative is the renminbi. And the renminbi is still really quite steady versus the dollar, but the dollar is going down quickly. When we then think about the Eurozone, well, Europe has got a lot of challenges, but the euro is rising. And Europe has already got a well-developed economy. It's already got some of the institutions for a federal state. And it's got the staying power of the Deutschmark behind it. So there is the potential that it could be the euro would be the potential reserve currency of the future, because it's not like China doesn't have its own challenges. They've got a record amount of debt as well, and this debt problem is universal to every economy. It's not just the USA. Europe also has a wall of debt, and so does China. So then we can think about, well, which are the economies that are going to be able to control their debt? Well, the only place that has really had any kind of appetite for fiscal restraint is Europe. And they're certainly leaving that now, but it does leave them in a somewhat better position. And that is being reflected in the currency. So obviously Europe doesn't want to have the strongest currency in the world, and the ECB may yet intervene, but it has broken out against the renminbi. And there is potential here that it will get stronger. Now, when we then think about some of the problem areas, well, the Turkish lira moved on to a new low in here today. Now, the weakness of the currency, where it has gone from 2 in 2014 to 7 today, is really quite acute. So it has flattered the domestic stock market. So the National 100 has been rising over the course of the last decade, although it was down in a really quite dynamic fashion in here today. And when we then just strip out the currency, we can see that there has been a clear downtrend for foreign investors over the course of the last decade, and it broke down to new reaction lows in here today. So this is extending the downtrend, and it could potentially move substantially lower from here, all depending on what happens with Turkey. And I think it's another example of exactly the same kind of phenomenon that we've seen with the rise of interest in gold, the continued move towards cloud computing. It's that the COVID-19 has been an accelerant, and it has taken trends that were in evidence in 2018 and 2019 and either made them better or worse. So for heavily indebted countries that were relying on some form of economic revival, well, the COVID-19 lockdowns has put paid to those hopes, and their debt problems are now becoming clear and present dangers. Whereas when we think about compression in yields and the competition for interest and the potential for inflation, well, all of that was quite present last year, but there was no catalyst to make it a really significant and urgent way of thinking about the markets. Well, COVID-19 accelerated it. So there is the potential that we are seeing market moves accelerate, and the rationale for owning anything is pulling in investors' decisions from further out into the future. And I think that's particularly true of some of the companies like Apple, where the price was up again in here today, but it's clearly accelerating. And the big question is, as the price moves progressively further towards being the first $2 trillion company, then I looked at this yesterday, it was at 1.88 trillion. So it's gone up 100 billion since yesterday. Well, this is extraordinary. The fact that Apple now represents a greater single stock weighting in the S&P 500 than any other company in history. It's even more extraordinary that companies like Microsoft, at a market cap of 1.6 trillion, and Amazon, which is pretty similar, about 1.6 trillion, these are also at historically high levels relative to the overall index. The only other company that came even close was IBM in the early 1980s. Now, this is a clear example of how they are pulling in revenues from further out in the future. The acceleration that has been, or the accelerant, like adding gasoline to a fire, that the coronavirus has represented, has pulled in sales from way out in the future. Well, it obviously raises the question about what's going to happen when we do eventually get a virus vaccine, and when people go eventually back to their normal lives, where are the new sales going to come from? What is going to contribute to additional growth for their markets? When we think about Apple, the valuation is up to 33. Amazon is still trading on a PE of 108. Well, we might yet see all retail stores go bust and Apple truly monopolize the market. We're not there yet. But when it comes to cloud computing, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of data centers have been built. And will there be enough of demand to make them all busy when the eventual lockdowns end? Then, of course, there is the potential that we could start to see inflationary pressures rising faster than people are willing to concede. The oil price was pretty much unchanged in here today, but it is recovering, and there has been a significant drawdown in terms of the willingness of investors to fund drilling operations. So drilling is pretty much at a standstill, and that will erase the overhead supply. Now, unconventional supply is elastic, so when prices go back above $60 or $70, then it will spur additional investment in new drilling, but probably not yet, and particularly against a background where governments around the world are increasingly talking about green new initiatives and increasing the cost of credit, of carbon, then the resistance to additional energy infrastructure from a fossil fuels perspective is only growing. It's going to make it more difficult for these companies to invest in additional new supply. Well, that is potentially quite bullish for the oil price. And the move down to negative territory on the front month for West Texas Intermediate could quite likely have represented the low for the cycle. We may not see prices back below $20, and that it is much more likely that 40 will be a much more important area where clear supply destruction will start to come in a very profound manner, because I think that is what's happening right now. But of course, that also means that we're going to have inflationary pressures rising, and soft commodity prices are beginning to respond. So we have Arabica coffee that has bounced reasonably impressively, but it hasn't quite yet broken that sequence of lower rally highs. But the price in real is at a new high, and that is going to stoke in demand into the market, because farmers will clearly want to try and capture higher prices. So it's quite likely that there's going to be a record crop in Brazil this year. The Brazilian real, of course, has been the primary reason why you've had that divergence, and it does look like we're going to see additional weakness there as well. So we're still in an uncertain environment from a currency's perspective, because there is still the overhang of the coronavirus, and some countries have dealt better with it than others, and emerging markets in particular have been hit hard. But the reality is that as we come out of the coronavirus scare, and particularly as vaccines become available next year, well, then investors are going to start looking for growth. And growth is in the emerging markets. And it's also where higher interest rates will be available. So then when you've got the dollar that is still weak, then it will create an investment argument for the emerging markets. And it's quite normal that when you've got commodity prices that are recovering, gold that is doing well, energy prices that are stable to rising, then it does tend to create an investment demand for emerging markets as well, because we're going to need to get back into a synchronized period of global economic expansion, and that's quite likely when we exit the coronavirus scare in the first place. So then it would create a great demand for emerging markets, and perhaps less demand for some of the high-flying stocks that are jumping in market cap by hundreds of billions a day. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.